This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedure Subteam Track 2, Legal Regulatory Issues, held on the 2nd of March, 2017. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Michael Fleming. Please begin.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and probably good night to a few of you. Thank you, everyone, for joining us these early, or at this time of day, for the Working Track 2 meeting for closed generics. Today, I'm hoping that we'll be able to have some very, very enjoyable conversation in regards to a subject that many individuals have a lot of mixed feelings about. So just to kick us off, here's our agenda. We'll touch on CC2 just very briefly, go over the closed generics, and I'm expecting that we won't have any time for any other business, but does anyone have any other business that they must absolutely just couldn't live without saying right now? None? Then I believe we'll be good to move on. Okay, so CC2 questions. Over the last week, we had the review of CC2 questions going on in the overall working group meeting. We will not be going over CC2 questions in the individual work tracks. Therefore, I will not be actually looking at these today. However, if anyone has any questions about the questions, then I would be happy to kind of clarify anything at this point. Does anyone have any questions at all about what the questions are? Nobody has any questions on the questions? Then that is as much time as we will spend on that. Moving on. Closed generics. See, I didn't keep you guys waiting. All right. Closed generic. First of all, I'd like to look at what a closed generic actually is. I did a little research, surfing on the ICANN website, and it was a lot of fun, but I did find a few things. First of all, what is a closed generic? Closed generic is referred to in the community as a TLD string, as a generic term, and is proposed to be operated by a an applicant, which probably should be applicant, exclusively for its own benefit. This is according to the February 2nd meeting of the NGPC in 2003. And also of relative importance is what is defined as a generic string as per the registry agreement specification 11.3b. Can everyone hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm sounding deaf. So I feel like my voice is a little bit quiet. Is everything hearing me okay? How am I now? Louder? Much better. All right. This microphone. Wonderful. Okay. All right. So the next string is as defined by the specification 11. 3D. Spaces are coming up on the screen again. Okay. Generic string means a string consisting of a word or a term that white spaces really are appearing on the screen. It's that denominates or describes a general class of or goods, services, groups, organizations, or things as opposed to distinguishing a specific brand of goods, services, groups, organizations, or things from those of others. So this is how we can refer to it as a closed generic. So what actually exists in writing in regards to closed generic? Well, first of all, the GMSO policy had little to no reference in regards to closed generics, as well as the applicant guidebook. Neither of these actually took it upon themselves to deal with have much on the subject written specifically. However, the registry agreement itself, what we just did read, has the specification 11.3D. This refers to exclusive registration in a generic string. The exclusive registration has an exclusive domain name registration. So I'm going to read it for those who may be only on audio. So registry of a generic string TOD may not impose eligibility criteria for registering names in the TOD that limit registrations exclusively to a single person or entity and or that person's or entity's affiliates as defined in Section 2.9C of the Registry Agreement. Generic string means a string consisting of a word. And I just read that, so we'll just leave that where it is. Okay. So, and then there's also the Specification 9 of the Code of Conduct. The Specification 9, known as the Code of Conduct, that forbids a registry or its affiliates, not the white spaces again, to allocate in its own right other than names registered through the ICANN and the Quer registry. Oh, gosh, I'm not making any sense. Okay, so basically the Code of Conduct states that you can't register any names for the registry or its affiliates other than those 100 names that the registry is allowed to register. The registry is allowed to register for the promotion of the TLD, or if they do it through an ICANN registrar, it's okay. Okay, so how do we get here? Well, I would like... Oh, that one, it's too small. Okay, sorry. I need to get this to a reasonable size. So how do we get here? Well, I want everyone to kind of go back in time with me 4 years prior to one of our adolescent stage where many of us were still happy and innocent, but we were all united in fighting against the GAC. No, I'm just kidding. I shouldn't say it like that. But anyways, first of all, there were a lot of comments originally about closed generics in the initial application period, but more specifically, something that spooked the waters, if you will, was the GAC advice of the Government Advisory Committee issued Safeguard Category 2 advice and the 11 April 2013 meeting of the ICANN Beijing ICANN meeting. This came to be known as the Beijing GAC Communique. This stated that for strings representing generic terms, exclusive registry access should serve as a public interest goal. GAC also identified a non-exhaustive list of strings that were considered to be generic where the applicant was proposing exclusive use. In order to deal with this or to get more public comment, ICANN did seek public comment from February 5th to March 7th, 2013, on the subject of closed generics and whether or not those requirements should be adopted in regards to them. Specifically, comments looked at the following criteria to help identify the following criteria. Classifying certain applications as closed generics, i.e. how to determine whether a string is generic, and determining the circumstances under which a particular TLD operator should be permitted to adopt open or closed registration policies. And as a result of the public comment, we did receive a lot of comments. Believe me, I tried to count all those on by hand because they didn't fall into Excel very well. But I stopped after page 5, and I just assumed that they were a lot. I think there's nearly about 300 organizations, individuals that probably commented on that ICANN public comment. However, knowing that there are a lot, just a few of the highlights that the new GTLD policy final issue report looked at. Sorry, yes, Jeff, thank you. Jeff has put the report in chat. I should have provided the link. But all the same, I'm going to read these highlights. And basically, most comments had something fell along somewhere along these lines. First of all, for the first point, allowing a single entity to exclusive use of a generic term may allow them to have an inappropriate level of control over that term at the top level, in particular for industry terms, where that exclusive control could result in anti-competitive behavior. Second bullet point, exclusive access is contrary to competition and consumer choice and may in fact result in user confusion. Third bullet point, suggestion for defining generic including using principles of trademark law, (in parentheses), i.e. a term that could not be trademarked should not be eligible to be operated in a closed fashion. What bullet point? Suggesting that it may be more practical to define conditions under which a TLD could be operated in a closed manner rather than trying generic. Sorry, I'm reading this, so I'm really starting to think I need glasses. Coinciding with the public comments, actually, the GNSO Council did provide a response to the NGPC about whether or not to establish formal policy. But the response was basically that there's not enough time to establish any form of policy, and that they would encourage individual GNSO members to comment in the public comment itself. So, what are we doing here today? Why has everyone gone out of their way to come to this meeting? The NGPC actually why is everyone thinking about this today? Well, as a result of all this hysteria and discussion, I shouldn't say hysteria, but a lot of discussion and a lot of interest in regards to the closed generics, the NGPC did approve an edit to the registry agreement and their July 2nd, 2013 meeting that addressed the Category 2 safeguards. This edit itself is the Specification 11 Public Interest Commitment 3D. As for the applicants that were actually identified in the GAP Category 2 advice, they were asked to change their application, maintain their current plan with the application, be deferred to the next round of the GTLD program, or withdraw their application. Industry also requested of the GNSO new GTLD the policy development to address this issue in their, I think, probably close to final meeting of June 6, 2015. So, this is what we are doing here today. Now, there are a few exceptions to the idea of exclusive use for a TLD. First of all, there is the exemption to the code of conduct granted by ICANN. I just realized I have to read this while screening my eyes. So, an exemption to the code of conduct can be granted by ICANN if the registry operator demonstrates to ICANN's reasonable satisfaction that, one, all the naming registrations in the TLD are registered to and maintained by registry operator for the exclusive use of registry operator or its affiliates. Two, registry operator does not sell, distribute, or transfer control or use of any registrations in the TLD to any third party that is not an affiliate of registry operator. And three, application of this code of conduct to the TLD is not necessary to protect the public interest. And then the other aspect of exclusive use is seen as in a when a brand TOD is qualified by specification 13. This is half a page long, and does anybody think I should just skip over? Should I read the brand TOD? Y'all don't have to read it. Okay, you don't have to read it. Okay. But to summarize it, basically, in order to have brand TOD, in order to be a brand TOD, you need to have a consistent registered trademark that is not a generic string as defined in specification 11, and you need to keep that trademark and use it within its specified goods under their specified goods under the trademark registration. Yes, everyone can find it on. Thank you, Christine. Everyone can find it on iCAD's website. Okay, so sorry, I got to pull back my own. Can everyone freely see the screen, or is it? Do they see how I'm moving? Oh, okay. All right. So then we move on to the million-dollar question. Should there be restrictions around the exclusive use of generics TLDs? This is question time. So this is about as much as I will be discussing today in regards to this subject. However, I'm expecting... Oh, you see what I'm doing. I'm sorry. I've been moving my screen quite excitedly. But yes, so the million-dollar question here is, should there be restrictions around the exclusive use of generic TLDs? I wanted it to be more of a discussion, so I'm expecting everyone to have their own opinion on this. So if anyone would like to take off the conversation, try to answer the question, then feel free to. Everyone has the floor. Seven. Should we just allow closed generics should we just not even mention it in the policy? Okay, Jeff, thanks. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Jeff Newman. I'm not going to offer an opinion on that. I'll let others jump in and offer an opinion. I do want to point out, though, that if we do decide, whether we decide to allow or not allow, we need to talk about the definition of generic. We also need to account for certain things that have happened. So, for example, Dot Food was granted a specification 13 and not considered a closed generic. It's a trademark owned by Scripps or the Food Network, I guess. So we have to figure out ways to, regardless of, again, if the rules to allow it or not, especially if it's to not allow it, we need to make sure that there are objective criteria for which we can make determinations on when exceptions should be granted. So this is everyone's time to kind of weigh in. I know there's people on a lot of sides of these. I know that there are people in this queue that actually make comments during the public comment period. The reason we're all here now is because the board has asked us to come up with a policy for the next round. So we should work hard to come up with some sort of recommendation. With that, I'm waiting for someone to raise their hand here. A lot of people with opinions.
If y'all don't speak up, I'm going back to bed, so. So, Alexander Schubert has already provided a few mentions in chat here. He says that the applicant guidebook should exclude generic keyword strings. He also mentions that makeup L'Oreal is totally unused. Susan Payne is typing. Should I be asking different questions? Oh, here we go. Okay, Jeff Aubrey.
I will defer to I'll defer to Christina.
Okay, yeah, I'll pretty much defer to Christina, but one of the things I wanted to say, that one of the options we have is to say, nope, we're fine with what the board did, and except maybe for a tweak here or there, since it's the status quo, it can stand. So that certainly is an option that we always have here. I'm not recommending it, but the point is, if we don't want to discuss it and don't want to, you know, get into the issue, but maybe just want to sort of say, yeah, the board did the right thing and we should just leave it as it is. But I'll defer to others. I just want to make sure people know that the status quo holds.
Gina, you have the floor.
Great, thank you. I'm sure it probably won't come as any surprise to anyone that we're of the view that there shouldn't be restrictions around exclusive use of generic GLDs. I will try and find a link to a letter that Amazon submitted on this issue back in 2013, but the long and the short of it is that restricting quote-unquote closed generics, which of course raises the issue of what is closed and what is generic, essentially puts ICANN in the position of deciding that some business models are better than others. And not only do we disagree with that concept, but we also think that it is contrary to one of the concepts behind the new GTLD program, which is innovation, and giving registry operators the opportunity to use the TLD as an incubator, for lack of a better word, for new business models. I think if you look at the history of Facebook, for example, Facebook originally operated as a fairly closed system. And as it built up capabilities and features, it expanded. So that doesn't necessarily mean that an applicant or registry operator, as the case may be, that initially decides that it wants to restrict access to third parties to its TLD is always going to do that. But the bottom line is that it will be extraordinarily difficult to draw fine lines between what is generic and what is not, what is closed and what is not, and to come up with a good rationale for why certain business models are better than others. And I'll go ahead and look for the letter that we had previously put in on this issue, and when I find it, I'll circulate a link to the list.
Thank you, Christina. Jeff?
Yeah, thanks. I'm just reading in the chat. There's some conversations about Alexander is making some comments about, afraid of registries that would rather keep ownership of domains instead of having regular registrations, which kills rights for registrants. So I guess there's a couple questions. Number one, and then Alexander, before you had mentioned that certain TLDs are not even being used. I think there's some high-level questions here. If we start questioning closed generics in terms of not allowing them, are we getting ICANN into the regulation of business models for top-level domains? And if we do, then why is that a slippery slope for regulating other types of business models that, for whatever reason, it doesn't like? I mean, are we getting into that area? Also, to think about a question that come up is, what is the difference between closed generic TLD and a generic TLD that has a ton of restrictions? Is there any difference there? So I'll Paul's now in the queue, so I will drop out. Thanks.
Okay, Paul, you have the floor.
Thanks. So a couple of thoughts on the closed generics issue, home and for the record. The first comment is that in the last round, ultimately they were not allowed, but there was never really a good reason given. If I recall the history correctly, everybody was plugging along, thinking that they would be allowed because the applicant guidebook did not disallow them, and therefore what's not disallowed is, generally speaking, allowed. And it wasn't until very late in the process that I think, and again, I might take some heat for saying this, but pretty sure the original objection came from some registrars who kind of woke up one day and realized, you know, gee whiz, we're not going to make any money on the second level sales here. So we're opposed to that because it doesn't fit within the traditional ICANN business model for the industry, which was at that time all about and only about selling second level domain names. And that's not where we are now as an industry, but it was where we were then. And then jumping on that bandwagon were a couple of governments who, again, I don't want to get in trouble, but I think the general idea there was that there may be some competition concerns around closed generics, but nobody could sort of, spell out what that might be, nor could they spell out what piece of national legislation in their countries could possibly be used to restrict the use of top-level domain names in advance to avoid a hypothetical competition concern that nobody could really identify. And that's where we ended up, ultimately ended up with GAC advice, which essentially modified a huge portion of the applicant guidebook well after the applicant guidebook was supposed to be static and fixed. So a little color commentary in terms of how we got there. So essentially it was there to solve a problem that had not been fully diagnosed as there being a problem. So we don't really have a great history here of any reason to continue with the way the last round turned out. There doesn't seem to be any particular basis of law to restrict the business models that TLDs can be put to. If anybody wants to go down that path, I think we have to sort of go back and do the hard work of finding out whether or not there really is any reason other than, it might not result in as many second-level domain name sales and or there is some vague competition concern that nobody can really put their finger on. Because I don't think either of those two things are really a basis to restrict business models. And that's kind of where my thinking is. And but I will say this, whatever we do, let's try to make it as change-proof at the last minute as possible. We don't want to do is to reach a conclusion on this and end up where we are, again, where giant chunks of the applicant guidebook are changed in the 10th hour of the process, well after everybody spent all the time and effort getting their applications in and paying their fees. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. So we've got still a lot of interesting conversation going on in the chat. I could read it if people want, but we do have a lot of interest. We've got a lot, and I probably can't keep up here. So there's a lot of conversation going on between Alexander, Cheryl, Karen, and Susan. So Susan responds directly to Paul, saying that, correct, Paul. The board chose not to make really a decision on this, and which is why they tasked GNSO to form a policy for future. Isn't that what they always do when they can't make a decision? That's not Susan, that was me. But no one in round one could proceed as a closed generic, but they were given option eventually after most had already agreed they would open up to go on indefinite hold pending this PDP. Then Karen is also still responding to Alexander, but so maybe we should ask different questions. Thank you, Christina. Christina Rosetta has shared the link from the Amazon letter. I wonder if we shouldn't be asking different questions. Let's assume that we keep this as it is today. We keep what the NGPC has come up with. We keep the specification 11.3D in the PICS, the specification 11.3D as it is, and we allow for those exemptions as per the Code of Conduct and the specification 13. Does anyone see any problems with leaving it as it is now? Paul, go ahead.
Hi, Paul McGrady. Sorry, I don't mean to consume all the oxygen on this one, but I don't see a problem with leaving it as it is necessarily from, I mean, I see all kinds of problems with leaving it as it is, and I've already been through that. But I think the problem with leaving it as it is may result in a bigger problem than is caused by leaving it as it is. In other words, when the last time that this went down, the board did this, the U.S. government was the final say about who gets in and who gets out of the route. They've since stepped back. There is no final government in charge of this anymore. It's a purely private affair. And if ICANN shuts down enough business models, people may get it in their heads that maybe ICANN, you know, we should be looking at the ecosystem more generally. And so I think it would be a bad idea for ICANN to be in the way of healthy competition if it wants to maintain its preeminent position in this particular marketplace. So we need to sort of take a step back and look at the broader issue of what goes down in the event that ICANN gets in the business of deciding what business models win and what business models lose. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. Christina?
Apologies, it took a minute to get off mute. Christina Rosette for the transcript. I object to leaving it as it is now because essentially the board punted to the GNSO. There wasn't really a rationale, any kind of, if we were to adopt with the board, the position the board took, there isn't really a policy rationale for it other than the board said so. And I don't think that's the right outcome. I think it's important that this TDP examine the issue. Obviously, I've indicated what I would prefer the PDP outcome be. But the fact of the matter is there has to be an examination of it. We can't just punt and say, well, we can't decide. We're going to throw up our hands and just go by default. To me, that's the worst possible outcome.
Thank you, Christina. So, the opinion, sorry, Christina has a very valid point. We need to make something. We need to do something on this. And not mentioning it at all is indecision at this point, honestly. But, I can see the discussion in the chat, and I'm going both ways here, but Paul is also right. We need to open this up, and we need to look at it. We need to look at where law might apply, and we need to have a basis for decision in regards to what is decided. As it stands now, the current policy does not mention or does not prohibit closed generics, as if one is aware. Then again, the other aspect of this is, well, the registry agreement does say that, you know, you can't operate the closed generics, so you cannot operate generic strings in an exclusive manner. It's rather, I'm trying to figure out a good way to say this. I think that a lot of the generic strings, some of the generic strings that have come out recently, it's very difficult to see, to not interpret them as exclusive sometimes. I'm just saying that because reading some of the registration policies, it can be interpreted that it's very, very, very closely regulated, but not exclusive. In some instances, I think it's almost impossible to actually regulate the generic strings as they are. Paul, go ahead.
Hi, Paul McGrady again. So I think question number one, and maybe we should start compiling a list of questions that we need to ask in order to get to the answer. I think question number one is, what is the basis upon which ICANN has the power to decide which business models make it and which business models don't. And I think a very basic question, can a California nonprofit that is supposed to be doing technical functions, where does an authority come from to restrict how competition happens in its space, right? So that's sort of question number one. And if the answer to that, this is sort of like choose your own adventure. If the answer to it is they don't have really any, you know, legal basis to restrict closed generics, then that answers the question. But if there is some legal basis for them to close, you know, to restrict closed generics, then we can ask question number two, which is what are the actual or purely fantastic perceived harms of doing that? And does that outweigh whatever the downside is to restricting business models, right? We sort of need to walk through the process. But I think question number one is, can ICANN even do this? I suspect I already know the answer, which I don't think will surprise anybody on the call, what my opinion of that is. But I think it's sort of a good step one. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Jeff, I think you might be a little bit more knowledgeable in this area, but are you aware of, in response to Paul's question, are you aware of any activity or research that ICANN might have done in the past, any consultation on whether or not there actually is a law, or there is law that can at least be the grounds for ICANN making the decision that it did? Or should we interpret that this is something that was just weighed upon in regards to public interest? Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, I would, this is Jeff. I don't know of any law or research that they did. That was still at a time when the memos that were published were kept confidential. They'll all go back and see if anyone drafted a memo, a board memo that is public on this. But my guess is it came in as public interest. It came in as a GAC advice. And I think that ICANN just, rather than disagreeing with it and saying no and going through the whole process of saying no to the GAC, I think they tried to find a way to say yes to the GAC, but in a way that, you have to remember there were what they asked each of the applicants to do was they never said to the applicant, you have to change your model. What they said is, if you are a closed generic, you're put on hold, and it was this really long-term hold, and you can come back to us and propose changes. And if you propose changes, we can then agree to those and let you go forward. But there were a few that didn't agree to it, and in fact, one applicant I remember was Safeway, which applied for Dot Grocery and maybe some others, and they just withdrew their application completely. And I think ICANN was hoping it would all go away by having people either withdraw completely or just grudgingly volunteer to change their model so that it would go through. But ICANN never had to make a real determination. And so the one I still have a question on, and I'd really like to go back and get an answer to this, is how something like Dot Food got through. I'm not questioning whether it should have gotten through or not. I'm just saying that, you know, it seems like an anomaly to me when others did not get through and others were forced to change or highly encouraged to change their business model, but somehow, some way got through. And if there is some exception or some reason they got through, then I think we need to find out. Christina says that we could find out by looking at their Spec 13 application.
And Jeff, and I would take that another reference to the specification 11.3D does actually note that it shows the distinguishing between how a brand is used to the generic string is used to define a brand versus regular day items in a way. But I think food is an interesting conversation, and that's food for thought. But I think we need to explore the aspect of how one would actually go about challenging That's in regards to the specification 13. But before that, Susan has been patiently waiting, so let's go ahead and take our next caller. Susan, you're on the line. Susan, I think you're on mute.
Ah, is that better?
Much better, thank you.
Yes, sorry about that. I had multiple audio going then. No, I was going to say, I think the distinction with food is that it was a Spec 13 application. I mean, obviously not at the time they filed it because Spec 13 didn't exist, but, you know, the applicant for that TLD has a trademark registration for food, which is granted by the USPTO. And I suppose regardless of what anyone may think about that trademark registration, it's not ICANN's job to be inserting its own opinion on the validity of the mark against that of the USPTO. So with there being a valid trademark registration for particular goods or services, you know, hence the reason for allowing the Food Network's application to go forward in the way it did with the Spec 13. I think we ought to be extremely cautious about suggesting that we should be, that we should be, either we as the community or that ICANN should be imposing its judgment over the judgment of national trademark offices. I think we should be very cautious about that.
Thank you, Susan. Christina, let's take our next caller. Christina, you're on the line.
Yeah, Christina Rosette for the transcript. I would really ask and strongly urge that we go back to Paul's suggestion of trying to identify the questions that we need to answer before we can reach a conclusion. As much as I actually am enjoying this discussion, I think unless we put some structure on it, we're just going to keep discussing. And I don't know that we're going to be able to come to any organized outcome. And given that we have another issue coming up ahead of us in which the working group for that issue ultimately reached a stalemate for kind of this reason, namely vertical integration, I would just really, really urge that we all think about what questions we can agree as a group need to be answered before we can come to a conclusion. Thanks.
Christina, I agree with you, and I take that to heart. I actually want to apologize to everyone because I'm starting to feel like I'm not asking the right questions today. I was hoping this conversation would go a little bit better, but I do feel that, as Christina and Paul have also suggested, we need to find the questions, or we need to be look at the questions we need to be answering. And going back to the reason why I asked Jeff whether or not research or consultation with the law firm was done in the past was because I was wondering, Jeff, I think we do have an allowance or amount or that we do have the ability to request funds for certain consultations. Paul? Go ahead.
Hi, Paul McGrady again for the record. Again, it's going to depend. We need to ask the question, right, or the series of questions, but we also need to be very aware of who we're going to ask. If we ask ICANN's regular outside counsel, there's no way in the world they're going to come back and say what happened in the last round shouldn't have happened, okay? So this needs to be asked. It needs to be asked of a law firm that does not have a conflict of interest in making sure they get to the right answer from the last round. So, I'm sure they're good lawyers, but they're gonna do what they need to do to make sure that they don't have an admission that this got botched last time. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Jeff, go ahead.
Okay, sorry, took a second there. So on research. we may have the ability to ask for certain research to be done. I'm not sure this question involves necessarily a legal issue. I'm not sure you're going to find any law. I think this is truly policy-based, unless someone can come forward and argue the legal argument either for or against it. I think at this point, I think it is mostly policy-based. But I could be wrong, and if we do come up with some legal questions, then we could make a request for some research to be done. But we really need some narrowly tailored questions.
Jeff, I agree with you. I think it's both aspects of the spectrum, honestly. There's probably, I think the first thing everyone jumps to when they think about the generics is obviously whether or not a market should be a monopoly should be regulated or not. And I might not be using the correct English this morning, and I'm no legal expert either, so how you would tie two and two together obviously would require a bit of interpretation, but it is policy as well, and that's why we can't ignore either side of this. But all saying that it's a competition law issue. And Mary's asking Paul what would be the specific legal question to be asked. So I think that we have these questions that we need better formulated questions. And that's why, once again, I apologize, everyone. But we need to be looking, we need to be able to ask better questions that will help us formulate those policies. For these formulate policies to look at the certain legal aspect to see if there, what does exist, what doesn't exist. Susan, I'm not going to ask that question. I think a lot of us, I think that has been answered, at least that exists in the public comments already, that answer, what the harm is. And I think the understanding is that the basically closed generics will hurt, open free trade, or the open internet in a way. Jeff, do you have anything to say?
I don't think the question's been answered. I disagree a little bit with you on that. I think that, yes, there are public comments out there, and we can collect the pros and the cons. No one has really, other than the NGPC, has weighed the benefits and harms. But I do have to say that the NGPC was weighing other benefits and harms that we don't have. For example, the NGPC was weighing what is the chance of being sued as a result of this and stopping the whole entire program, what is the harm of refusing GAC advice and then having to deal with that issue. Those are harms and benefits. Those are things that the NGPC had to consider, which we don't. So I do think we should collect from the public comments, the perceived harms, the perceived benefits, by the way. There were a number of benefits that people came forward with. We also need to look at things like, were the people that submitted comments making comments, what were they competitors of ones that applied for the TLD? So I'll give you an example. The CTIA, the Cellular Telecommunications and Internet Association, I think is their abbreviation, in the U.S., filed a letter objecting to someone's closed application for .mobile because they didn't want one carrier to have control over the term mobile. I don't even know if it ended up going to that carrier, but that was one thing that they objected to. But in essence, it was a competition issue in the legal sense, but it was competitors not wanting one of them to have the TLD. So I do think we should collect the benefits, the harms, we should engage in a weighing exercise that's different than the one the board did, because we don't have the same type of interests now, and engage in that kind of analysis. And, you know, if someone is saying, like Michael, you made a pretty broad statement saying that a closed generic impedes free trade. Well, I don't know. I mean, I could take the other side, too. I'm not saying, again, I'm for it or against it. I'm just making a point that, you know, that's a pretty broad argument that it's against free trade, that we're making the argument, but without necessarily factual basis to make that argument. So,
Jeff, I was just speculating of what the idea might be. I wasn't trying to make an assumption.
Right, okay. But either way, let's collect the benefits and the harms. Let's compare them. Let's weigh them. Let's also figure out what has happened in practice. So, you know, you might say that you don't like you don't want to close generic, but then again, when someone, quote unquote, opened up their TLD, they really open it up, or they put enough restrictions in so it functions as a closed TLD anyway. And if that's the case, then does the rule really take care of the policy?
Okay, Jeff, I think that's enough to... Sorry, I'm not trying to cut you off, but I think Susan wants a question, and then... Sorry, Susan wants to speak, as well as there's some activity I wanted to highlight in the chat as well. But I'm going to agree... Okay, I apologize for my previous jumping to conclusion about we shouldn't ask that question, but I can understand that. If we want to kind of reopen this and kind of... reaccumulate the argument from what it's into our own understanding and into being able to come to our own conclusion about whether or not there is actual harm. Let's do that. Susan, go ahead and have the floor, and then I wanted to address something that Mary and Paul are actually discussing right now.
Oh, okay. That's good. Thanks. What I put my hand up to say is it has actually largely been said by Jeff, which is, you know, I wasn't sort of expecting someone on this call to suddenly answer my question with, you know, telling me what the harm is. I think that is one of the questions we are being tasked to ask ourselves. And I think we need to weigh that up. I was going to be typing a second question, which was, you know, what would be the benefits or what would be the perceived benefits? I think, you know, there is this weighing exercise to carry out. But Mary has made a good point about, does everyone have a common understanding of what closed generics means? And I had kind of assumed that we do, but the comment from Alexander straight underneath it seems to me to suggest that maybe we don't. So Alexander is talking about a situation where you know, in an open registry model, you effectively have a right to continually renew, whereas in a closed generic, he says the registry could simply retain the right to sell the domain at any time and cancel the lease that the registrant on the domain has. I guess he's right, but my perception of a closed generic would be that's perhaps not such a risk, since your registry is the one who is controlling the names. I mean, that's the point, that it's closed, so it's names that they aren't selling. And so I think, you know, Alexander's example and my perception of what a closed generic are don't seem to be the same, and so I think that is a really important question that we probably should answer straight away at the beginning.
Okay. Yeah, this is Alexander. So the thing is, lots of us are kind of IQ political, and not many in this group are for example domainers or domain professionals and know the tricks that are out there. I'm a domainer since 1997, since 20 years. And I can tell you, if it is possible to construct a deal whereby I don't have to give all the rights to the registrant, but can kind of retain a lot of rights and keep the domain so that the registrant is actually the registry, like it is should be in the closed model. But the registrant kind of feels like a registrant. Just look at third level registrations.com, like CenturyLink with those two-letter.com domain names where they sell third level domain names, and most registrants probably feel that they are at a real registry and don't really understand that they just buy third level registrations under a second level registration.com. And every now and then such a second level registration is sold, which means that all the domains that have been owned there are suddenly gone. At minimum, if we would allow a generic keyword term to become a closed generic, there would have been a number of provisions that make sure that if these domains are used by others in the same type like a registration, that there are certain rights and that they're not simply going and start to act like a registry, like CenturyLink with the third-level registrations.com, and the users think they are registering a domain name, but they don't, and they are without any rights. I'm finished.
Thank you, Alexander. I can definitely understand where you're coming from, and I'd like to address that specifically. The aspect of, for an example, of the offering third-level registration, that is brought up in the registry agreement in other specific places in regards to whether or not, when a registry does offer a third-level domain name registration. However, not to steer too far from the closed generic argument, and I'm just going to close today's meeting with a bit of an action item, if you will. But I do feel that there is, as Susan stated, and now that I understand how Alexander is kind of interpreting the closed generic aspect, that we do need to come back to and look at what is a closed generic and try to find that consensus for what our understanding of a closed generic is. My understanding specifically is the registry restricts, literally has the exclusive use of the TLD to its affiliates and does not sell anything under the TLD into third parties, as in what, for example, offering third-level domain name registrations. That would not happen. That's my understanding. Perhaps I'm wrong. Let's discuss this. Jeff, you have something to say, and then I'm going to close today's meeting.
Yeah, thanks. Jeff Newman. So there is a definition. I would strongly encourage everyone to read that definition. There's definitions that are in both Specification 13 and definitions in Specification 11 of how that governs how names could be used. I would suggest going forward what we do is we categorize the harms, we categorize the benefits, and we prepare something for the next call, which isn't until later in March, so that we can go through those, see whether we agree that these are benefits and these are harms, and kind of take it one step at a time. I understand Paul's question of, you know, whether I can have the right or to do this or not. I think that's a tough question for us to tackle, but let's the leaders take that offline and see if there's something we can do to kind of address that question. So that's what I would suggest going forward, and that we have this again on the agenda for the next call.
Yeah, I didn't expect to include this in one call. Jeff, I'm just going to mention one word, and you kind of resonate with me. CC2. Sorry, I was expecting that we could markedly use the CC2 as an example, but perhaps we should leave CC2 for some of our prior subjects. Yes, let's leave this discussion for our next call. there were a lot of points and questions that have been raised. I will look at these and try to follow up with a follow-up to for everyone and what then our next few questions will be in the next call. We'll have a bit of a recap, and then we'll jump into our discussion again. So with that, I send you off. Jeff, do you have something final to say? Yes? I get the last word, though. But... No, you don't. Okay. You're on mute. So with that, I wish everyone a good day, and I will see you in Copenhagen.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Once again, thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.